Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
If it's Monday and it's the postseason, it's a Baseball America Playoff Podcast. John Manuel and J.J. Cooper with you here. Still more baseball to talk about, J.J. That's the best part about it. World Series Game 6 coming up. That's right. Baseball World Series Game 6 coming up. Over the weekend, we did not podcast. We have three games to kind of to chew on. And J.J., really, to me, the story of this World Series remains, I guess it depends on how you want to look at it, but for me, it's just the consistent inability of the Chicago Cubs to get off offensively, to explode offensively, to put consistent at-bats together offensively. And I think, it really doesn't matter where the blame goes, but I do think it's 50% the Indians pitching, which has been outstanding, maybe a little bit more than 50%. But I do think part of it is the consistent inability to have an approach by a lot of Cubs hitters, which just seems like their approach comes and goes. And after Game 5, I almost wonder if the hottest hitter after Anthony Rizzo is Jason Hayward, because he had a couple of good at-bats last night. It really...
Kyle Schwarber, who's been waiting to, in hibernation.
Well, that's the thing. How much... I mean, he is going to come in DH in Game 6 and potentially Game 7. I mean, what kind of legend would this guy be if... Okay, he comes out. They won the one game without him. Now he get on my back, boys, and he carries them to Game 6 and 7.
Of course,
that
at the same time, you could also argue that the game that they won with him, was Trevor Bauer.
Right.
Which is the other consistency. Right. Trevor Bauer was good for three innings last night. In the fourth inning, he wasn't good.
I tell you, my son was getting ready to go to sleep, and as soon as Bryant hit the home run, and the next pitch, Rizzo doubled, and my son was just like, why isn't the bullpen active? Why isn't somebody else coming in right now? And he kind of was right, because even though Bauer righted himself and that two of the hits after that were a bunt single and a swinging bunt, that's really almost all it took for the Cubs to get two more runs. A couple other good at-bats, and the Indians fell behind, and Aroldis Chapman made sure they stayed behind.
Right, and that was the thing that stood out to me from yesterday, which I was obviously tweeting about during the game, but I did not understand how it was kind of treated. Wow, they've gone to, Chapman's going to have to work almost three innings, 2 2/3 innings, like this was going to be some death-defying feat for him.
Clearly there's a narrative in the media of covering this World Series, number one, which I don't think it's unfounded, but that Andrew Miller greater than Chapman, A. B, it's easy to root against Aroldis Chapman, and I understand why. Totally sympathize with that. But the third part of that is that Terry Francona has outmanaged Joe Maddon at every turn. So there was just a lot of, in my Twitter feed among the national writers recovering this World Series, there was just every instinct to doubt that move and to downplay that move and to think that that move was the wrong move. Whereas I think if the situation had been reversed, everyone would have thought, oh, brilliant move by Francona. That's just built into the analysis.
It seemed weird to me because... Yeah. Chapman is a guy who is a premium athlete.
Yes.
Probably one of the most athletic pitchers in baseball.
I would say he's the most athletic pitcher.
That's a fair way to... Because his 103, 104 comes from he is a quick twitch guy.
He's the definition of high pockets as a body.
He's athletic. He's a former starter.
Yeah.
This was a guy who was a starter in Cuba. This was a guy who was a starter in the minor leagues. It's not something where you say... Gonna ask you to go 45 pitches. Can you handle that? Again,
this isn't some stiff guy who just powers through his delivery to throw hard. There's nothing stiff about anything Aroldis Chapman does.
If you get to the game 7 and you need him in the 6th, you put him in the 6th. And because I'm not saying you do this in game 6 because you got to win 2, but in game 7, again, if it gets to a game 7, they're going they're going Hendricks, I would assume, and
yes.
Then Hendricks and whatever time you need him, you go to Chapman, and I do think it's somewhat like Bumgarner in Game 7 2 years ago, where you say, when we need to go somewhere else, we'll go somewhere else. But the reality of it is that the rest of this Cubs bullpen, which should be a strength, but the rest of this Cubs bullpen has not been particularly impressive in this World Series.
Well, here's the thing is, how often have we seen Hector Rondon or Pedro Strop in the playoffs at all? And why is it that instead of seeing Strope or Rondon, especially Strope, who's experienced, who's been good all year, I know every reliever has their ups and downs, but I think Pedro Strop's pretty good. I think Mondo's pretty good too. But why are we seeing Carl Edwards Jr. in the seventh inning? And that was, so I understand why there's criticism of Joe Maddon. That was a bizarrely managed inning. First, you're going to go to two rookies and Edwards Jr. and Contreras at the same time. Two, that you're going to pinch hit Montero, but you don't leave him in the catch for Ross.
Which basically at this point, apparently Montero is
just a pinch hitter.
Yeah.
He's like Schwarber with knees that work, apparently. And without as good of a swing, although he's had some good swings in this postseason. So that was bizarre all the way around. Why would you burn him and not have the other catcher? Because part of Contreras' charm and utility is that he's versatile. So everything Joe Maddon did in that inning was making things harder for the Cubs to win, except for bringing in Chapman. That was the one smart move he made, and he seemed like he got criticized for all of them. I think the Chapman move was a smart one. It's pretty easy to separate it from the bad moves he made.
The other thing that was odd in that was the fact that at some point it's like, okay, when are we going to see Schwarber? Because
that was also stunning.
The one that was, and again, I understand that John Lester is an ace who also is, let's just describe him at this point as finicky.
He's an ornery. He's an ornery sort.
You know, and I mean, like, we had David Ross come up in a blow-the-game-open situation. And he got sack fly RBI.
I still liked leaving Ross in at that point, not just because of Lester, but because he has shown throughout the postseason, even if he's not a great hitter, he gives you a good approach. He gives you quality at bats. That doesn't mean that the result's going to work, but his process is a quality process. I would not have pinch hit for him in the fourth inning.
But I know, and it was the fourth. I mean, that...
I'm anti-Jonah Carey on that one. Jonah and Alex Cora went back and forth on Twitter on that
but
one.
The thing to
I was
be,
on Team Cora.
The thing to be about that, though, is it almost led to a very interesting decision. Because let's say that Ross didn't come through there. Because, again, he got the run.
Right.
And once he gets the run, then it's like, okay, well, John Lester's up. We've got a lead.
That's different.
But if Ross had not come through then, it would have led to a very interesting decision. Because with two outs and basically the bases loaded, you probably still would let Lester hit there.
Yes.
But that would have been a...
I would have, because John Lester is paid.
Right.
Part of it is you already had the lead. It was 2-0 or 2-1.
2-1, I think.
2-1
because we already had the...
2-1 because, I would have left Lester in because that is the whole point of John Lester.
Right.
He's not Kyle Hendricks. He's not even Jake Arrieta. He's not John Lackey. He's John Lester. So I understand all the pro pinch hit Schwarber arguments there. I'm still on the side of Ross and Lester being left in, and it did work out.
It does baffle me though that we saw Miguel Montero pinch hit and we never saw Kyle Schwarber.
That absolutely, and that so there are a couple of weird things. I will say that Rondon pitched fairly ineffectively in the division series, and he pitched two innings, gave up three hits in the LCS. Stroop also gave up two runs in three innings in the LCS, but he was used four times. But still, it just seems very strange that Carl Edwards Jr. is the guy that they're trusting there and not Stroop or Rondon.
But I do feel like right now that Joe Maddon kind of feels like he has a reliever that he really believes in.
Yeah, well, Stroop, because Stroop's gotten four outs in this series, and two of them were via strikeout, and doesn't use him. Rondon hasn't been as effective. But for me, Stroop, it's... There's no question. Edwards lost you the 1-0 game. He missed his spot by a foot and a half to Coco Crisp, left the fastball that was supposed to be located away on the inner half. I mean, his fastball, this is the reason I loved him so much as a prospect in A-ball. His fastball has incredible life, so much so that even Wilson Contreras, who can snag 102 that's bounced like it's nothing, he couldn't handle that cutter going away at 94
great,
or whatever
great tweet
it was.
From John Baker, former catcher, and now reports to the cover organization is like, no, the spawn of Johnny Bench and Yadier Molina
that was
does
awesome.
Not catch that.
That was a great tweet. But so Edwards' stuff is so lively. I get it. But I just don't trust him as much as I trust Stroop. And I'm not in the clubhouse. I'm not there seeing it every day. This is clearly not just Joe Maddon's call. Chris Bosio, I'm sure, has a large say in this. I wouldn't be surprised if Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and Jason McLeod have some input into that decision. But it's still been a stunning decision. That would be on a workout day today, this travel day. That would be what I would be asking Joe Maddon about. Stay to your bullpen. Who do you trust and why? And I don't know how much he's going to give up on that. But I would want to know what he says for public consumption.
Kicking it to looking, so we're sitting here, it is the travel day, and then we have game 6 and maybe game 7. And so what we know is that we have essentially game 6, if you're the Cubs, this is how you set this up. You feel like that you should have the advantage in game six on the pitching mound, on the mound. You should. It hasn't
worked
that way.
But it hasn't, yeah.
It hasn't worked that way. But again, when you talk about
full... This would be Tomlin and Hendricks, correct?
This would be Tomlin and Arrieta with Hendricks in game seven. Arrieta on full rest, basically, versus short rest Tomlin. Again, logically you would think, but then Josh Tomlin, that goes back to Cubs approach.
Right. I mean, Josh Tomlin has... I mean, the short version of the approach has been the pitching in the postseason is different than pitching in the regular season. Pitching in the postseason means shorter leash for starting pitchers and a whole lot more breaking balls. You know,
and that's the thing that the Cubs...
Right, that's where they've struggled.
I say semi-jokingly, but if you didn't throw the ball, if a pitcher balked, but he got into a curveball or slider motion, would Javier Baez swing?
Yes. Javier Baez would swing. There's no question about it.
There is, right now, if you have a catcher behind, again, this comes back to approach, but
He's got 9 strikeouts and 21 at-bats in the World Series so far.
And I feel like every single one of them has come on a breaking ball that is so far out of the zone that you have no hope to swing.
Well, the thing is,
or a check swing one where he's like, wow.
He goes 0-2 on breaking ball, and swings through a high fastball a lot of the times, too.
Yeah.
So they've got him totally discombobulated, and, you know,
who put together great at-bats earlier on in the playoffs.
Well, I mean, clearly, he even early in the playoffs, he was still swinging very aggressively. He was still being extremely aggressive. You know, the Indians, to their credit, A, they've executed better. B, they've game-planned extremely well. They game-planned better than the Dodgers or Nationals did against Javi Baez.
But just Baez. I mean, you could...
But against the whole team. And they have been all in on more off-speed stuff, which the Dodgers did to some effect. But their bullpen, not nearly as good as the Indians' bullpen. And, you know, the Indians have been opportunistic early in games offensively.
But to also give them credit, because if you are going with a breaking ball heavy approach, you have to execute those breaking balls.
Yeah.
You have to either locate them, or if you miss, you have to miss in a way. You can't hang it. You can miss where you miss and it's way out of the zone. But they've done that. There have been very few easily hittable, you got to hit that breaking ball.
Yeah, not a ton of hangers they've been able to bang. Even the pitch before the fastball that Bryant hit out was a hittable breaking ball, but even then he took it. Mm-hmm. But Trevor Bauer threw, I thought, better breaking balls. But the other part of it is you still have to locate the fastball, and that's the separator, is that Bauer doesn't locate the fastball. Tomlin and Kluber do. Brian Shaw does. And locating the fastball, even in Cody Allen. Cody Allen was really good last night in Game 5, in a game where he was fresh and kept the Cubs right at bay.
Well, and I mean, the other thing you got to think of that did come out of that game was, if you're the Indians, is now you have Andrew Miller. You have Andrew Miller ready and waiting
for
Game 6, where deploy the Miller in whatever inning you need to deploy.
But I mean, but these two teams, I mean, pitching really has been the story. The Indians have a .315 on base and a .236 batting average in this series. The Cubs are hitting .210 with a .281 batting average so far in the World Series. They have a .327 ERA and they're losing 3-2. JJ, coming into the World Series, I did think that Corey Kluber could be one of the, for the general fan, could be a breakout star. I didn't realize that. I know starters have started games 1, 4, and 7. Starters have won a couple of games. I think we had Bumgarner with 2 wins and a save in 2014.
Right.
But we haven't had a starting pitcher start and win 3 games in the World Series since Mickey Lolich in 1968.
And basically to do that, you're essentially generally talking about 1, 4, 7.
That's right. So, I mean, I know we've had, I believe Randy Johnson won 2 games in 2001 and then won Game 3 in relief in Game 7 because Randy Johnson, total freak of nature. But right now, I mean, I think you look at the Indians. Again, the matchup does, I think, favor the Cubs with Arrieta. I would favor the Cubs at any start that doesn't include Kluber on the mound, frankly. But all the Indians had to do, in my mind, was win one without Kluber, and he threw 81 pitches. And I'll say Lester said last night that he was done after 6 innings. That he told Joe Maddon, 90 pitches, I grinded every single pitch, he was done. Corey Kluber throwed 88 and 81 in his 2 starts. Do you expect to see, if we get to a Game 7, do you expect to see good Kluber, great Kluber? Which Kluber do you think you're going to see?
Good Kluber. I do think
Game one Kluber or game four Kluber?
Because
game
one
Kluber was
game one
really
Kluber
special.
Is exceptional. I mean, like, that's as good as you're going to pitch.
Yeah.
To be honest, game one Kluber is one of those that you only see. Even the best starting pitchers are like that, 2, 3, 4, 5 starts a year. Like, you have to be talking like 99 Pedro to yeah. You know, or Maddux in the you know, in 95
regular season Maddux.
You know, in 95. You know, like, you have to be in one of those all time years.
Yeah.
To see that more than a couple of times. I mean, again, it's one of the things that when you see a game like that.
14 Bumgarner.
When you see a game like that, you just have to appreciate it because you know you're seeing something that you don't get to see very often.
I mean, honestly, now that we didn't appreciate it at the time, it really makes you appreciate what Bumgarner did even more because he has made the postseason. I know that, you know, he was gotten to by the Cubs in his second postseason outing that he looked more mortal. But to see what he's done over the course of his postseason career in this era when the tension's ratcheted up, and that he makes the postseason look so easy, it really is kind of remarkable. And it also should make you appreciate what Kluber has done. I guess I should have more appreciation for what Tomlin's done. He still hasn't gone 5 innings in right. this World Series. Like, the bar should be held fairly high. I mean, not for the win, just to get your team as deep in a game
right.
as possible.
Right, again, and that's what that sign. What the sign of that is that they do not trust him the same way. And they
right.
shouldn't. They
right.
shouldn't. In August, he was really bad.
Right.
They have not developed. Josh Tomlin has not developed the level of trust that Corey Kluber, and he should. And there's no reason he would have. I will transition to another little idea from this, and I wonder what you thought, because we've had this discussion before. We've had it on the podcast. We've seen game in, game out, and it's almost not the umpire's fault. But we now have the precision to what we've gone from 15 years ago to now is now when an umpire blows a call on a ball strike call, we all know.
We all knew when Eric Gregg blew it.
Right, with Eric Gregg, but it had to be egregious before. You didn't have the angle. I mean, like, but when it was close, it was something where you could argue it. But when it was a borderline call, it was almost expected.
We have more precision now, yes.
Whereas now it's something where you go, wow, he actually threw those 5 pitches were all in the zone and 2 of them were called balls. Or he really got away with them. That one was a good 8 inches off the outside corner and he still got the call. What I mean by this is saying is...
I think we always knew that. I mean, we knew that this was the point of the entire Braves. This was talked about the entire breadth and width
right. Tom Glavine's
career. So we have more precision, and I think we have a bigger speaker via social media that people talk about it more.
But we definitely
have more groupthink in the media.
But the other thing also we have is now we do have an alternative that is talked about that did not exist 15 years ago.
Correct.
15 years ago, all that could be said was the umpires need to be better.
As soon as the game was over yesterday, I watched a little bit of the Fox post game, but I switched over to MLB Network, and that's the first thing Eric Burns was talking about. Eric Burns and Paul Severino were in the studio to basically buy time until they could get their studio set up on the field with Amsinger, Al Leiter, and HR. And that's what Eric Burns was on, and that's because Eric Burns basically convinced me about robot umps on Real Sports, HBO Real Sports. And the postseason has just reinforced that. I mean, the real question for me with umpires is, what is their review process and what is the process of where they're graded over the course of a season? Are they basically rewarded for the postseason just because it's your turn? Or is there actually some merit? And who's doing the grading? It doesn't feel like there's any merit to it. It doesn't feel like there's any, oh, you missed this many calls, and there's not any accountability for those guys. So, they never have to meet the media. How different do you think umpires would be if after a game like that, where the players are under that kind of stress, the managers are under that kind of stress, and everything they do is picked apart, and they have to answer for it, and the umpires never do? How different would it be if the umpire had to go after a game and talk, hey, you know, StatCast had that you missed 15 balls and strikes last night? I think umpires' reaction to it would be totally different. I think being held accountable makes you better. Umpires aren't held accountable, so they don't get better.
And I think you just hit on the other part of it, which is that the guys who are put behind the plate to call balls and strikes in the World Series are not put behind the plate to call balls and strikes in the World Series because they're the best at calling balls and strikes during the season.
That's correct.
Now,
that's the problem.
And the interesting thing with that, though, is that that is a different skill. if you said that the crew chief
right
is there because this guy knows the rules better than anyone, and he, you know, and he's the guy who can get everyone together and make sure that we make the right call, that's fine. But that doesn't, again, that's a different skill set than the skill set. And every single one of those things, to be honest, at this point, is almost, it's now reviewable.
Right.
If you get a call wrong on, well, that ball was down the line and you missed the call, it was foul, not fair.
Right.
We can fix that.
They should have, but here's the thing, they should have always been reviewable. We have better technology that makes the, should make the review process better, but they always should have been reviewable. But instead, the process is one of lack of accountability, of closing ranks, always defending each other, always spurning them any scrutiny from the media. And I don't understand, I don't understand why that mentality exists and why it's been allowed to exist. And I have to imagine the reason it exists is that 100 years ago, there was one umpire and everyone tried to get one over on him. And if you could physically intimidate him, do it. And right. So we have these anachronistic...
It literally stems from like 1900 where, you know, well, the ruffians in Chicago really got on, you know, Al, the umpire.
And John McGraw really got one over on, you know, whatever.
And by that, we do mean like they threw bottles at him and had to fight his way to the, you know.
But the whole rest of the game is modernized and everyone else is accountable and these guys aren't. And I have very little sympathy for umpires, and we should have Josh Norris on one of these podcasts to defend their integrity. But just the fact that they're not accountable is what leads to that culture, is what leads to you can miss and be wrong with impunity. There's no recourse for either manager or any of the players. How is that? How does that lead? How does that process lead to better umpiring?
I mean, again,
it doesn't.
That,
how can it?
The best thing that has happened as far as that was is when, in the last 10 years, there has been an improvement from the standpoint of, like, there was more accountability. Because you remember, I mean, in our time at Baseball America, there was a time where essentially it was, there was almost no data that the MLB could go to the umpire and say, you need to fix this. At least now we do have, you're missing low and away over and over. You need to fix that. Again, is that full accountability? No.
Right.
But it is an improvement over what we had. But the reality of it is that no matter, even if there was accountability, if it does come back to, there are going to be misses.
Right.
The problem we have is that really the most important part of the game in many ways is where there is more fallibility.
It's just the fundamental, it's harder. I bet it's harder to call balls and strikes now than ever because of velocity, mm-hmm. period. It's the building block of the game. It's the pitcher-batter battle, and you're an integral part of that, and that part's not reviewed. It's not reviewed to an extent anywhere near the rest of the game.
There was a pitch, a missed call last night, low and away, Indians up. I can't remember who the batter was now. But Indians up and like basically strike three, and it really wasn't. I mean, like when that happens, it is game changing.
Right. Might have been Brendan Guyer, actually.
And it is game
changing. It was a John Lester sequence that actually Burns went over in the post game of outside corner cutters, trying to get that outside corner over and over again. He missed. And then on the 3-2 pitch, a pitch that was maybe a shade closer to the plate, but not by much, was suddenly called a strike, and that was where Burnsy just kind of lost it. And to his credit, he didn't really lose it, but he was pretty frustrated with the home plate umpire. And it's been consistent, but to me, I mean, I know that over the course of 162 games, it generally evens out, but in the postseason,
it doesn't.
It just doesn't.
I mean, seven games, it doesn't. And the reality of it is that also, again, it is what it is. It's the rules that we have, and everyone has to deal with it and all, but there's also different pitchers who, as you just said, like if you have control, if you're a veteran and you have control, you get a call that you do not get if you do not have control, especially if you're a rookie who doesn't have control, you're not getting that call.
Right.
Again, that's one thing where that's a variable that you can't control, and it is different from pitcher to pitcher.
No question. I did want to throw in one more thing. I know we're trying to wrap up a little bit quicker today. Brian Shaw has been pretty amazing in the postseason. I wanted to bring that up. It's easy to focus on.
It is a three-headed monster. It is. It's not a two-headed monster that we keep talking about.
It is. I mean, he gave up a couple of runs in the division series to the Red Sox. He gave up a couple of runs, one earned against the Blue Jays. In the World Series, he's given up one unearned run, but 3 2/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, and he's just painting right now, JJ. And you see confidence with a hitter. You can see a lot of confidence with Brian Shaw.
And he's painting with anyone legit stuff.
Yeah, and it's pretty much anybody who comes out of the Indians bullpen, good for the Indians. We haven't seen Jeff Manship in this World Series.
I was going to say, the thing that jumps out is that, I mean,
their depth is they're much more confident using their three guys than the Cubs are anyone
right.
besides Chapman.
But the other thing that is notable is that even though we essentially have Kluber and then everyone else besides Kluber is like, can you give us four?
Yeah,
please,
exactly.
We're begging you. Can That's you give right. us four? Josh, can you give us four? Trevor, can you give us four? Even with that, we did get to see a Mike Clevenger sighting for
right.
A minute and a half yesterday. But we are not seeing the depth of the Indians bullpen. We're not seeing the 5, 6, 7 guys.
Yeah.
We're seeing the big three.
We haven't seen much doubting Danny Salazar. We saw one inning of Danny Salazar. He hasn't exactly been a change maker being
right.
healthy for this series.
But what we are seeing, though, is the top three have been really, really good.
Yeah, well, especially those top three guys on that bullpen and Kluber. Those four guys have been outstanding.
And then they've gotten, like, Danny Otero spackles over an inning
yep.
here. They have, again, then Danny Salazar an inning here.
It kind of looks like a College World Series. You need four guys. That's what they're trying to prove right now is, to win a World Series, can you do it with four pitchers? Maybe five?
And the answer
may be yes.
And I would say the thing about this is that, and I do think this is a good way kind of to finish up on it. Because, I've seen the discussion on there also, why can't you do this more during the regular season? And I do think that there is a lack of appreciation for just how the off days of the postseason make
Absolutely.
This an entirely different game.
Absolutely.
Andrew Miller has been used pretty much to a level that any game that matters almost, and they've got a lead, he's going two innings plus.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And Andrew Miller, despite that, his workload for October was slightly more than what a normal month is. Because even with that, Andrew Miller is getting multiple days off in a way that he rarely does during the season.
I don't remember which reliever it was who did a
Danny Otero.
Was it Otero who did media availability who said, yeah, if we were used like this in the regular season, we'd be burned out by April or May.
Right.
So,
if you
want to
do
the regular season.
If you want to do this during the regular season, if you want to use Andrew Miller for 2 1/3, 2 2/3, you can.
Yep.
But then you have to say, okay, we're not using you for 2 days.
Yeah, exactly.
And the problem you have with that is that during the regular season, you're playing 162, and game 112 matters as much as game 108.
Yep.
And so over the course of that, you have to look long-term and short-term. There is no long-term right now.
Yeah.
There's zero long-term.
There's zero
and
long-term.
And so with that, you can do this. But again, the off days now, Aroldis Chapman was used to a level that he's basically never been used as a big league reliever last
yeah.
night. Aroldis Chapman's October was essentially the same number of innings as he throws during a normal month.
For me, if
it's like 13 2/3,
yeah.
I think, for October.
We'll see what happens in game 6. But if Arrieta were able to go deep, he pitched very well, but very erratically, and only went into the 6th inning in his first start in the World Series in Cleveland. I guess that was game 2. For me, if Arrieta is able to go deep, or if the Cubs get a big lead, and they, in other words, if they don't have to use Aroldis Chapman much in game 6, or if they don't use him at all, I would go to him as early as possible in game 7. And I mean, if you put him out there in the 3rd inning, I'd put him out there in the 3rd inning.
Oh, what I'm
I would let Aroldis Chapman eat as much as he can eat.
And you know what? He will tell
you. I would let him
you,
eat in game 6 too, I'd be honest with you.
But especially in game 7, he will tell you, that 9th inning last night, there was no diminishment. I would, without a doubt, I would say that in the 9th inning, he was better than he was in the 7th.
Yeah, oh no, he was electric.
So,
he saw Ramirez a second time, and Ramirez, like, I guess he foul-tipped the last pitch. That's as close as he got to contact.
If that had been a tie game, not that he gave up the runs, but if that had been a tie game, there is no reason that
yeah,
you would have said, he can't go
10th.
To the 10th.
Absolutely.
There's nothing that he was showing. And again, can you do that long-term? No. But if you're the Cubs and Aroldis Chapman, I hate to be just this mercenary about it, but if you're the Cubs and Aroldis Chapman is a free agent at the end of the
yeah,
year,
that absolutely.
4 innings from him? Okay, well, let's see an inning 4 if he's still got it. And you know what? If he doesn't, you got a guy. You get a guy up at that
it's,
point.
If it's game 6 and 7, you're trying to win your first World Series since 1908. In my mind, every pitcher is on a pitch-by-pitch basis. And the fact that
the
Joe
team
Madden,
is greater, and there's no yes. like, well, you've earned this where you get another inning.
And the fact that Joe Madden didn't have a reliever getting ready on a mound every inning, somebody has a ball and is on a mound. They're not throwing yet, but at the first sign of trouble, you're getting hot. And it's inexcusable to not have somebody ready for any pitcher in any situation because it's game 6 and 7. And I can guarantee you that Francona's got someone ready. Hell, he's got two guys standing around almost in the field to freaking play in the first inning, which that's ridiculous. I know they're getting rid of those mounds, but that's ridiculous. How does Major League Baseball not police that a little better? Jason Hayward's chasing a foul ball and almost runs into two dudes. That's just ridiculous. I mean, imagine that in an NBA game. Just for example, you're running back down the court and you run in. Say you run into a fan or you run into the coach. He sets a screen on you and the other dude scores. That wouldn't be allowed. Maybe it would. I don't know. But that's like in the old school Cotton Bowl in the 1930s where the dude came off the sidelines and tackled a guy. I mean, like that happened in the 1930s. That's supposed to happen in modern baseball. In modern sports, and it almost happened.
Apparently,
last night.
It's going to not happen starting in 2017.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. They are getting rid of those bullpens, which is a good sign. I'll wrap with this. Eric Fisher of the Sports Business Journal, I follow him for sports business stuff. He tweeted that national figures for World Series Game 4, 16.7 million viewers, up 23% from last year. Best Game 4 since 2009. Best Saturday World Series game viewership since 2004. And I'll see what the ratings were last night. He hasn't tweeted them yet this morning about where Game 5 was. Cubs on the brink of elimination. Cubs certainly bring a lot of fans to the yard. And then you also had Sunday Night Football.
Good game. So,
and you had the Cowboys, who were hot. Big national audience for the Cowboys. It'll be really interesting to see what the ratings were for last night. But it does seem like this World Series has been the best ratings-wise. So for the sport, very good to see a Game 6. And I would love to have a Game 7. I really don't care who wins this World Series. I'm rooting for a good play. It's the opposite of a tragic blimp World Series. I'm rooting. I have good things to say about both organizations. I could do without all the Chief Wahoo logos, but that's probably for another podcast. But I'm glad we have more to come, and we'll have another podcast after Game 6.
And Matt Eddy is also happy because this means that we're at least two more days before minor league free agents are released.
I hadn't even thought about it that way. But
Matt wanted more baseball, then he's like, and the other good news is that two more days, this pushes back minor league free agency for two more days.
We also have to have an international podcast with Ben Badler, and we still have the Matt Blood podcast in the can. So those are all coming this week from Baseball America and baseballamerica.com. Review us on iTunes. Check us out at Baseball America.
By the way, Google Play, I do believe you can also get our podcast on now if you're an Android. If you're not a podcast addict person like me.
So we've got at JJCoop36 to follow during the games. I'm at John Manuel BA. We'll see you in the next Baseball America podcast, everybody. So long.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.